Struck and Get Up by Ineffable Nerd. Read by CookieMom6067. Niccolo is the first to die. Struck in the head with an unnamed soldier's mace, he crumbles to the ground next to all the others. In his head swirl the images of two dark-haired women, neither dressed like anyone he's ever met before. He wakes up right where he fell, thinking it luck and God's will that his head wasn't crushed or severed by the blow. Yusuf dies a few days later at the other end of another battlefield, struck by a spear. He slowly bleeds out, praying to his God his body will somehow find his way back to his home to be buried. After he loses consciousness, a striking face of an enemy soldier fills his mind. He wakes up shortly after the weapon pulled out of him by another soldier, friend or enemy he doesn't know, to be used again to keep fighting this holy war. He tries to find the face from his dream, thinking it the face of the man who killed him. He is looking for revenge. When he finds him days later, he kills him with a single blow from his sword across the neck, only to be struck by the load of a trebuchet moments later. Niccolo wakes up again, this time sure that he'd died. His dreams now filled not only with the two women, but with an ever clearer image of one of his enemies. The face that had stricken him right across the neck moments ago, now smashed to bits under rocks. When the man starts to move again, he runs. That night he doesn't sleep. Instead, he prays to his God to give him guidance. What signs is he sending? Why let him live? Make him live. Yusuf, too, has understood now that he has died. Allah bringing him back with more images of the enemy's face and two women from across the world. He scrambles free of the rocks that killed him and starts looking for his fallen enemy. He isn't there. They both die many times more, sometimes by each other's hands, sometimes another, sometimes friendly fire, as it will be called in centuries to come. When they meet once again weeks later, Niccolo strikes first. Yusuf parries. They lock eyes through armor, scarves, and hoods. A silent battle in the midst of chaos. A silent conversation. Why are you in my dreams? Both ask through their weapons. Why do I keep seeing your face when I die? Strike. Parry. What have you done to me that I keep coming back? Strike. Parry. What is this war even for anymore? This one they only ask themselves. They keep turning, neither getting the upper hand without the advantage of surprise. Their eyes are locked as they die. Arrows from both sides hitting them right in the chest and neck. In the darkness of death, the faces again. This time it's only the women. When they wake, they search for the face now missing from their dream. They both sit up, in midst of a deathly battle, both alive again. I don't want to keep killing you, says Niccolo in Italian. It is senseless to fight an enemy who will not die, says Yusuf in Arabic. They reach to help each other up. A truce. They don't require a shared language for that. They start leaving the battlefield. Eyes keep darting to the enemy, who also cannot die, hands on their weapons. Twice Niccolo misinterprets a twitch and kills the other. Twice he waits at his side until he wakes up again. Each time the wait is shorter, even though the severity of the wounds was always the same. Niccolo doesn't know how to apologize to the strange man at his side. He was brought up to hate the people occupying the Holy Land. How come then they don't look like monsters? How come this man offers him his hand once again after all the times he has killed him? Yusuf is fascinated by the young man who keeps killing him. Every time he wakes back up, the light-skinned face darkened with worry that at this time it sticks, and still he keeps following him off the battlefield. They really are strange, these invaders with their metal shawls and red-crossed tunics. Or is it just this one? They leave the battlefield behind. Sometime after killing is long out of sight, they let go of their weapons in their respective hilts. They try to exchange words in different languages they speak, finally landing on Greek as a common tongue, even though neither of them is fluent in it. "I am Niccolo of Genoa," the Italian man offers along with his hand. "I am Yusuf al-Kisani," the other accepts the offer of peace. They walk in silence. They don't know where they are going, only that it is far away from where they came. At a stream, they rest and drink and wash. They notice each other's lack of scars, then their own as they look away from the stranger's body. When they stop for the night, a small fire between them for light and warmth, Yusuf tries translating his culture's poetry into broken Greek. When it doesn't work, he recites his favorites as is, clumsily explaining the theme as he goes along. Niccolo only sits and listens. This man is nothing like they told him the enemy would be. He does not seem an angry brute. He is not without culture or God. The poetry is as beautiful as the face reciting it, and Niccolo begins to cry, even though he doesn't understand the words. When Yusuf awakes in the morning, Niccolo is already up, burying his tunic in the sands off to the side, parting from the symbol that he can now only see as one of hatred and invasion. Yusuf doesn't ask questions. This man's faith is different from his, and he is having his own trials. They continue on their way, away from the battles, towards a new life. They decide on trying their luck in Ascalon to make their way to Alexandria. They both quietly send prayers to their families. It is better they think they died in battle than fled from it. Maybe they can return someday. Walking over the next few days, they learn more about each other, supplementing Greek with pointing and words in their own tongues. Niccolo tells of his hometown of Genoa, of the mountains to the north and the snow in the wintertime. He tells of fish markets and little boys' pranks, stealing apples from an orchard. Yusuf tells of fig trees and mosques and coffee brewed in hot sands. He tells of his siblings and the stories his grandmother told after dinner time. Niccolo doesn't tell of the journey to the Holy Land, of the people that died, the people that were killed for no reason other than that they lived in the wrong place at the wrong time. Yusuf doesn't tell of his father's stern voice, when he wanted to be a poet, not a merchant, of the relief when he could send him off to war to make him a man of his tastes. They both talk about their dreams, and they find both dream of the same women, wearing strange dresses and stern looks, in the background places neither have ever seen. They wonder if they can find them, and don't know where to start. But Alexandria is as good a place as any. The next night, Yusuf sits next to the other at the fire instead of opposite. They both quietly acknowledge their newfound trust, and Niccolo takes first watch. When Yusuf stirs in his sleep, Niccolo places a hand on his shoulder, maybe to wake him. But Yusuf's sleep calms as soon as the weight of the hand settles on him, and Niccolo leaves it there until it is time to change watch. While Niccolo sleeps, Yusuf watches him intently. His face is younger than when he is awake, the aging of grief and sorrows lost in the calm of dreams. He realizes that the Italian must be much younger than he had thought. Not a boy for a while, but most of the time since, spent worrying and traveling and fighting for nothing. He traces the lines of the striking face in the air, a face for sketching. He wonders if he'll have a way to draw again sometime. Right now they have nothing but the clothes on their back and the weapons on their hips and each other. With passing days, conversation only gets easier, stolen glances caught and reciprocated. Their gods have chosen them. Why and for what purpose is unknown. They sleep with one hand on their weapon and one on each other, the reassuring warmth and weight of a man no longer a stranger behind them. When they reach Ascalon, they sell what they can, chainmail, jewelry, weapons, for passage to Alexandria. In the dark corner of an inn, they teach each other the languages and get drunk on cheap wine and the prospect of a life so different than what they ever thought possible. When their eyes meet in a dip in the conversation, so do their lips. What is one more thing? One more thing they couldn't explain if they wanted to. One more thing others would call unnatural. One more thing that is anything but. The most natural thing in the world, as easy as waking up after being struck down. The end.